It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are off and running on this, the 21st day of September, 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that, of course, is where you go. If you would like to click on the tab that's marked chat room, pick yourself out a free screen name and a free password, and participate freely in more than one way. In the madcap, merry, zany, wacky, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. Yes, indeed. Just jump right in there. You'll be immediately met by the likes of Anatole and Jug of Punch and BT Bomb. Those are the ones who are early arrivals. You will also be capably moderated by longtime and veteran, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space this evening to the cool, comfortable confines of the man cave. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and it is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. I love Thorn in the Side Thursday. It truly, truly, I do. We reserve those for moments of... Oh! Thorns.
Ow!
Right? And, well, there's Silent R. Lamar wandering into the room. Good evening, Silent R. Lamar. So that's what, so with it being Thorn in the Side Thursday, we will have a, I'm sure a bumper crop. You don't really think of thorns in terms of bumper crops, but... Well, you get the idea. The first thing we've got to do, of course, this evening being this evening, is we've got to extend thanks. Extend thanks to the subscribers. Thank you very kindly to David in Vermont, and thanks very kindly to Joan in Tallahassee, and thank you very, very kindly indeed to Stephen in Ohio, our three subscribers for the 21st day of the month in any given month. Thank you very, very kindly. And that means, that's good news, that coupled... coupled with something that happened earlier this afternoon, namely... A communication from Bill, that means that we have, in order to keep up with this evening, we have every bit of $75 to raise. $75 to raise as far as fundraising goes this evening. And on top of that, courtesy of Chris in Germany, a challenge. A let's get the week out of the way challenge. So Chris has put $200 on the table if there are people out there who would like to match it to the tune of $200, 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 12 and a half, and 32 at 6 and a quarter, and 64 at $3.13. And we will, of course, round up that half a penny and put it into the fund that we apply to Agnes's Manny and Petty Fund. She likes to get the little designs and stuff. And it, right, yeah. Mm-hmm. By the way, note coming through from Sister Carol Baker. September 21st in Kansas City, heat index is 101. Thank God we're getting out of that Paris Agreement since China made this shit up. Yeah. I know how I managed to avoid it. I was actually pretty sane about it. But I've managed to get through the summer. Oh, shit, summer's over, isn't it? Is it today or is it tomorrow or the next? Summer's over. But I managed to get through without getting burned by the Chinese hoax. Amazing, amazing. All right, damn it, Asa. Cut the crap, Kincaid. How'd the doctor's visit go? Are you going to stay alive or not? Well, I don't think it's indefinite, but nobody's is. The doctor's visit went fairly well this morning. It was as I have feared. I have put weight back on. So it's time to get back busier with the yogurt and maybe stop enjoying food again for a while. Because I don't want all that crap to blow up again. But, no, blood work numbers are okay, but a person's not his blood work, that sort of thing. And so, you know, the doc looks at me and says, well, you know, we really need to get a CT scan to follow up and see what your spleen's looking like and whatever all that shit is that's gathered up around your spleen and see what your pancreas is looking like and whether or not all those pimples on your pancreas are still there or bigger or smaller or whatever. And I said, well, that's great. And he said, I know, no coverage. And I said, yep. He said, well, if you ever do get it, by Jove, we'll jump right out there and get that CT scan. And we'll probably get your gallbladder scanned as well. Groovy, you know, if you ever. Right. So I ran right out and spent a dollar on a lottery ticket. Because that's a problem. Given the way things are looking, particularly in the United States Senate, that might be my best shot at... Right. You get the idea. So, you know, I should be here. All I got to do is continue the reasonably clean living. And you know, I've all summer long I've been pushing the mower and weed eating and rah, and that's great around here in warm weather months. What I got to figure out now is some way of continuing to get meaningful exercise once the cold weather starts. And I got a feeling it's going to get here pretty quick because the wild cherry tree outside the house here, it's over on the next property line, those green leaves are already going to gold. So it won't be long. It won't be long. And you know, winter is when it gets kind of sketchy. And I get to be more sedentary. Sedentary, yes, sedentary. But I'm here. I'm here. Let the bells ring out and the banners fly. It's too good to be true. Feast your eyes on me. I'm here. Right, and it's Thorn in the Side Thursday. Let's see. What do we got? For those of you who were asking, and of course I'll get an email from some member of the Sparkle Fart powered unicorn Cavalry Purity Brigade. But I started reading. I started watching the Ken Burns Vietnam documentary. Now, being as how I am either at the absolute wagging tail end of the baby boom, or I am a pioneer of Generation X, and the more I look at things, the more I'd really rather be Generation X than baby boom, for a variety of reasons. Absolutely. Steve in New York sends me an email, the goldenrod. My dad tells me that the goldenrod has been prevalent near Dayton. Grandma always said that portended the first frost. I don't think we've had the first frost yet, but the goldenrod has been prolific, and there have been a couple of nights when I had to sort the button right in the middle of talking because of the sneezing that it brings on. Oh, we've got some guy. I got your goldenrod. Oh, that came out all wrong, didn't it? Sorry. So, anyway, that's kind of where we are. I just got done taking Ferg to work. As soon as the program's over, I will do the upload for the podcast and all of that stuff. A reminder: there's for those of you who would be interested in getting the podcast, there's several different ways to go about it. You can go through the XML feed over at whiterosesociety.org. You can go through the feed. You can go through iTunes. You can use podbean.com. There's multiple different ways to get the podcast form of this program, which is merely this program in pre-recorded form. I mean, I wish I could tell you that there were like scavenger hunt hints and shit in it, but there aren't. We just do what we do. But anyway, I started watching Ken Burns' Vietnam documentary. And, you know, I'm part of that generation that it didn't touch, at least not directly. I was 10, 11, 12 years old as it was wrapping up. And really, my generation, nothing has really ever been much asked of us. Not the way it was with the souls who were drafted and whose lives were wasted in that nightmare misadventure. Certainly not in the way that the generation was called upon that that thought they had forever beaten back global fascism. Ha! Joke's on them. Now the fascists are us. How about that? Oopsie. So, yeah. Nothing's really been asked of my generation. I mean, there was that one day in September 2011 when George W. Bush told us all to go shopping. I was there. That's right, grandson. I was there. He stood in that pile of rubble and he told us to go to Disney World. And, well, when your country needs you, you do what you're told. And so we went and took pictures with a giant cartoon rat to win the global war on terror. And that's what I did during the global war on terror, son. And then I bought a pair of tennis shoes and a cutting board and a probe thermometer and a smoker. And that's how we beat back radical Islamic fundamentalism. Yeah. Oh, by the way, are you feeling the... Are you feeling a little shabby, a little puny? Well, let me tell you a little something that helps me out. Loquacious lettuce. Loquacious lettuce capsules. You know, to this day, I really can't stand lettuce. And it's gotten even worse since I was young. If you've ever taken, whenever they screw up and they put the lettuce on my sandwich, it tastes all chemically and stuff. Well, thanks to Loquacious Lettuce from Horn Labs, a proprietary blend of both leaf and head lettuces in powdered encapsulated form, I get all the nutritional needs I could possibly want from lettuce in a handful of capsules every day. And like it says, it's loquacious lettuce. You'll feel positively chatty after you've started loquacious lettuce and been on it for a couple of months. You'll be as chatty as I am, Bob Kincaid, and be able to. You'll probably be able to talk without even thinking about it. Loquacious lettuce from Horn Labs. Only $29.95 for a 30-day supply, and for only 15 cents more. Let's see. No, 10. No, damn it. One of these days I got to work it out on paper. Anyway, for $60, only $60, we'll send you a 2-month supply. If you act now and operators are standing by, why, we'll send you a 3-month supply for only $90. Loquacious lettuce capsules, a nutritional supplement to help you start your day the green leafy way. Loquacious lettuce capsules from Horn Labs. Yes, yes. as Stephen New York noting, during the global war on terror, I gladly shoveled shit in Louisiana. Why, thank you, General Patton. So that's what we've got. That's just the beginning of the program. But a reminder, we've got a $200 challenge on the table to finish up fundraising for the week, which would be a magnificent thing, courtesy of Chris in Germany. Absolutely. Keith pointing out, loquacious lettuce from Horn Labs will make you run rabbits and run like a rabbit. Absolutely. So there's a challenge on the table, courtesy of Chris in Germany. And if we can get that met, we'll be done with fundraising for the week. Not for the month, but for the week. And that'll bring about a great deal of rejoicing. Long time since we've finished up a week's worth of fundraising ahead of time. Now, Bob, it's Thorn in the Side Thursday. What do you got? Ooh, I got a lot. Lots of thorns. Definitely lots of thorns. Mm-hmm. And it extends beyond thorns to just straight up dickishness. So we'll work through this stuff. But a scheduling note, not for the program. I got a little bit nostalgic. Because of something today. Bernie Sanders went to a lovely little hamlet today. There's a little village in central Missouri. It's got quite a history. Within the confines of this little village, from a food porn standpoint, are to be found, and we've discussed them on this program, probably the best sausage gravy and biscuits I have ever eaten in my life. At a truck stop that I think still exists. I think Carol Baker told me it still exists. Called Gaspers. And a place named Gaspers doesn't sound like a place you want to eat, but trust me, it is. Back in the day, the biscuits would come out hot and fresh about 2 o'clock in the morning, and the gravy would just be about getting done, too. And if you'd been out either partying or studying till about 2 o'clock in the morning, the approximately 10-mile run from the little hamlet out to Interstate 70 to Gaspers was well worth it. And we wonder how it, right, how I got to where I am. Yeah. But anyway, it all sits in Callaway County, which, when the Civil War came, and Missouri remained neutral, Callaway County seceded from Missouri and declared itself a kingdom. And to this day, it is referred to as the Kingdom of Callaway. Carol tells me, I've been there, and my sausage gravy is better, but their biscuits beat mine. Oh, there's some biscuits. Shh, mercy. So for a very long time, and I love the kismet that happens on this program. It was a couple of days ago that I made mention of the fact that at what is called the Green Foundation Lecture, back in 1948, at the invitation of Harry Truman, Winston Churchill came over and started an international incident when he declared, "An iron curtain has fallen across the face of Eastern Europe," in my best Winston Churchill impression. And so today, let's see, that's 52, 62, 69 years later, Bernie Sanders showed up in Fulton, Missouri, on the campus of Westminster College. At the time Churchill spoke, Westminster was an all-male college. By the time I arrived there in 1981, it had gone co-ed, but just barely. They'd started admitting women a couple of years before, realizing that if they did not, they would soon be a non-college. They would be a college that was pining for the fjords. And also because, you know, not admitting women is, what's the word I'm looking for? Fucking sexist. Yes. So today, Bernie Sanders went out to my alma mater, Westminster College, and he delivered a foreign policy speech. I'm sure lots of people, lots of burners may have watched it. And it was particularly interesting because rather than hammering on the topics for which he has become so well known, Bernie talked about foreign policy, which has not really, in the course of his career, been recognized as his long suit. So he spoke for about 50 minutes there at Westminster. And he addressed the recent attempts at foreign policy of the United States of America. In particular, he began his speech by critiquing and talking about reaching for the low-hanging fruit. I mean, that's not me critiquing Bernie. It's just, at this point, it's easy. I remember 2003 and 2002 when it wasn't so easy. I particularly remember October 2002 and forward when we kept going, no, yeah, some of us, not everybody. Oh, God, not everybody. Not in this country. Hell no. But some of us were saying back when we had what I like to call a unified progressive movement, maybe there weren't that many of us, but we all generally pretty much agreed with each other on essential policies and topics. And this is, of course, before the days of burners and hilarians. and the rabid partisans of each just daily picking at the scabs of the other side. And, yeah, ow, quit it. Ow, quit it. Yeah, ooh, stop it. One long thorn in the side Thursday, if you know what I mean. But he called out the stupidity of our invasion of Iraq, which it was. And then he said foreign policy is directly related to military policy and has everything to do with almost 7,000 young Americans being killed in Iraq and Afghanistan and tens of thousands coming home wounded in body and in spirit from a war we never should have gotten into. And everybody in the hall, and let me be clear about this, Westminster College has maybe 700-800 students. It was a great place to go to school because there was nowhere to hide. We jokingly referred to it as Harvard on Stinson. It wasn't particularly easy to get into. And it didn't matter if it was freshman comp or a senior level class. It was no big deal. Just about every class was taught by a PhD. And just about every class had maybe tops 15 people in it. So your absence was conspicuous, which I found out early on when I stopped going to algebra at 8 o'clock in the morning. You take a kid who's not very good at mathematics in the first place, and you stick him in algebra at 8 o'clock in the morning, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Come on, please. That wasn't happening. I bailed out of that rather quickly, hoping that maybe someday I'd find an algebra class that was like at 10 o'clock at night when I'm fully awake and can actually think about numbers. But anyway, it's a great little school, but it is not particularly liberal. One might even go so far as to say it's not very liberal at all. I mean, I remember Caspar Weinberger showing up to speak in the Green Foundation lecture series when I was there. And we protested that war criminal's arrival on the campus of our beloved institution, both of us. You see what I did there. Well, you hear what I did there. But Bernie went on to question the fact that Donald Dimwit wants to spend even more money on a military budget that is already, well, it's already so bloated as to make the skin of the balloon almost ready to pop at the, you know, at the mere touch. And it was a big deal. He reached back into history and reminded his audience of what Dwight Eisenhower warned in his farewell about the military industrial remember military industrial complex, the MIC, M-I-C, which is also the initials for methyl isocyanate, which is equally toxic. But anyway, it started out as the military industrial congressional complex. And somebody said, Ike, you know, you need to take that congressional part out. That's going to piss off a lot of people. Oh, okay. But he called President Eisenhower to mind and suggested that the United States needs to be an example to oppressive regimes, not in terms of how to oppress, but rather in terms of how to trust the people to be their own government. And I'll bet you thought that I forgot that I was talking about having started watching Ken Burns's Vietnam documentary. Yeah, I won't give you any spoilers. I mean, there may be people out there who don't know how it ends. And then there's the philosophical question of whether it has. But I'll tell you this much. One of the problems I always have with Ken Burns in the stuff that he does, and this is kind of a thorn in the side, is what seems to me his naive willingness to presume that everybody in every situation of conflict or crux is acting in good faith. And it is, and that predilection of his, alongside with what is apparently a chronic case in him of both siderism, well, I don't agree. Early on in you know, episode one, he says that everybody was to, basically he says everybody was to blame for Vietnam. You know who wasn't to blame for Vietnam? The people who said we didn't need to be there in the first place. And the people who, and early on, just kind of like the Iraq War, early on the people who were opposed to it were kind of scarce. But you know what? They share no blame whatsoever, no matter how hard Ken Burns tries. He's trying to present a picture of the people participating in the conflict as, you know, somehow acting in good faith. You know who was acting in good faith? The people in Vietnam who had been ruled for centuries by the Chinese and wanted to have their own nation, their own sovereignty, their own freedom. And who were then overrun by the French and still wanted to have their own nation, their own freedom, their own rights to, oh, what's that phrase? Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Who were then run out by the Japanese, who were every bit as brutal to the Vietnamese as the French and the Chinese had been. And still the Vietnamese wanted to be free. And so they finally run the French out, or the Japanese finally get run out, and what was then called French Indochina is administered in the immediate post-war period by the United States in the north and the British in the south. Well, that wasn't a good thing either. And then the French came back. And they ran the French out again. You know, you'd think that Western colonialists would take a fucking hint. This is why the program becomes part of Thorn in the Side Thursday. Did we? No. And by then, you know, it's Korea and post-Korea, and Russia has atomic capabilities, and it's Bruga Bruga communism, Bruga Bruga. But Ken Burns wants everybody to know that everybody was equally at fault. And I can't buy that. And that everybody was acting in good faith. You know, bullshit. If you're a corporate CEO who's looking at what was known as French Indochina, and we now know as Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos, and you're thinking, you know what, they got a lot of shit that I want it. I want it from our corporation because our shareholders will love that shit. Look at the rubber. Arr. You're not acting in good faith. You're acting like a colonialist, a colonizer, a predator. Because that's what colonialism is. It's predatory behavior. Just like the colonialism that Donald Dipshit talked about
you know, to the leaders of the African nations. By the way, I missed one. We're still trying to figure out where what exactly he was talking about when he mentioned that brand new African country of Namibia. I missed one. I got an email earlier today because I said, well, it could be Namibia or it could be Zambia. And somebody wrote in and said, oh, Bob, what about Gambia? It could be Gambia, too. You know, there's science is still looking for a way to calculate the full breadth and scope of Geezer Disgustus's absolute stupidity and his manifest privileged ignorance. And of course, while it was a foreign policy speech there in Missouri, Bernie had to loop back, and he tied it in. He tied in our disastrous foreign policy at present with what he called the outrageous income and wealth inequality that we have in the United States. And he made what I thought was a cogent point. This planet will not be secure or peaceful when so few have so much and so many have so little. There is not moral or economic justification for the six wealthiest people in the world having as much as the bottom half of the world's entire population of 3.7 billion people. That's a pretty stark status, isn't it? Six human beings on this pale blue dot hurtling in its helical way around the sun and through the universe. Six living things on this planet have as much stuff as 3.7 billion other creatures. I mean, you hear something like that, and you start understanding how it was that maybe sitting over an ice-cold Kirsch, that maybe Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels, you know, back in the 19th century said, you know, something's got to change here. This is unacceptable. This is intolerable. This is unsustainable. And that when other people got hold of the ideas, folks like Lenin and Mao, that their first thought was, you know what, we've got a list. There are some people who need to stand against what... You just stand over there for a minute there, Captain of the Industry. Just stand there for a second. Yes, your eminent, majestic, noble, royal, serene, high graciousness, Tsar Alexander. Just stand still for a second. No, actually, they machine gunned him in a basement, I think. But never mind, you get the idea. And those six people that Bernie Sanders were talking about today at on the campus of my alma mater there in Missouri, those six people have so much wealth and so much power that they can ruin the lives of those 3.7 billion other human beings. In the news report that I'm looking at, no mention as to whether the, because remember, this is central Missouri, just ask Carol Baker or Hoghead over in the chat room. That's not a hotbed of climate change activism, Missouri. You know, tiny Fulton there is about, what, 25 miles due north of Jefferson City, which, of course, is the state capital of Missouri, and which, of course, is so thoroughly infested by maggots and you couldn't, it'll be generations dislodging that Republican scum from that state, if ever. You know, Missouri in many ways is Alabama with Mark Twain. or Mississippi with Mark Twain? Because you do at least get Mark Twain out of Missouri. In fact, Fulton sits hard by the Mark Twain National Forest. There's some beautiful, beautiful country around there. But, of course, Bernie is right. There is an interconnectedness between foreign policy and domestic economic policy. But he said that, you know, he said climate change isn't a hoax, and I have nothing here that tells me whether they clapped or booed or sat there with their mouths hanging open catching flies because they were surprised that someone would actually say that in a place like Missouri. A took several shots, and you know, again, there's some courage involved with this. He took several pot shots at the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini. Oh yeah. You know, not the way I critique him, but still, I mean, to the extent that. I mean, you can't talk. You can't be a senator and talk about Donald Duck the draft the way I do. Interesting observation, Laurel pointing out, when what is happening with the global economy happens in the core of a star, it is called a supernova, the most violent act in the whole universe. But he did say that Tangerine Tiberius' decision to get out of the Paris Climate Accords was foolish and short-sighted. And in a statement that will probably just send the purity police into paroxysms of anguish, Bernie even said that. Trump was wrong and remains wrong because he won't condemn Russian meddling in the 2016 presidential election. And that he didn't mention it and didn't condemn it when he spoke to the United Nations. He even described as an outrage. Well, wait. Let me give a trigger warning to the purity police. Twee precious things. Put your fingers in your ears and say la 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 for about the next 30 seconds or so. Ready? 3, 2, 1. He said that it was an outrage that Vladimir Putin engaged in a massive effort to undermine the integrity of our elections. Okay, if the members of the unicorn sparkle fart power or the sparkle fart powered unicorn cavalry purity brigade have their fingers out of their ears, Bernie Sanders said that Vladimir Putin is a really awesome guy, and that there's nothing to the allegations of Russian hacking of the election, but DNC, Donna Brazile, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Bruga Bruga. See? Now they're not triggered. Bernie tried to make clear that he's not a softy on ISIS and Al-Qaeda. But he did note that the way we have prosecuted the war on terror has been a disaster. You know, which it has. Which it has. And it was a disaster the way we prosecuted under Trump. It was a disaster the way we prosecuted under Barack Obama. It was a disaster the way we prosecuted it during the reign of error under Dim Leader. Let's be clear about that. And to go back to the little Ken Burns documentary, it was a disaster the way we pursued foreign policy in Vietnam. One thing that did sort of present itself to me as a matter of comparison and contrast, though, goddamned English degree, was that, you know, during the whole of the Vietnam conflict, Vietnamese people didn't come over here and strap on dynamite belts and blow themselves up. And you know what? As compared to a lot of other people who have, the Vietnamese had a much greater right to do that. And yes, I'll say they had a right to do that. But they didn't. And that's the difference between something like Iraq and Afghanistan versus Vietnam. The Vietnamese just wanted to be left the fuck alone. Because they had, you know, eons of being not left alone by China, by, you know, France, by Japan, by us. And they just wanted to be, they wanted to be free to pursue their own destiny. But I would be remiss if I sat here and pretended that everything was just, you know, us bad, them good, which is, of course, kind of what Ken Burns is getting at. The president of South Vietnam, who turned out to be a horrifying monster. Well, he was an agent of colonialism. He was a staunch Roman Catholic in a Buddhist country who, you know, behaved in a westernized, colonialized way and brutalized. He killed his own people. I wasn't particularly thinking about it at this point in time, but, well, the goddess of irony does never sleep. Carol reminded me, you realize today is the International Day of Peace. The goddess of irony never sleeps, right? And that was sort of, I imagine Bernie probably knew that. He said the notion that the United States would be a benevolent global hegemony or exercise a benevolent global hegemony is, in his words, utterly discredited. He said, far too often American intervention and the use of American military power has produced unintended consequences which have caused incalculable harm. Hi, Vietnam. Hello, Chile. Oh, look, there's Iran. Uh-oh, Guatemala. And upon watching the first episode of Ken Burns' Vietnam last night, I wasn't very far into it at all, as Ken Burns introduced us to his thesis of both sides do it. When it occurred to me, and I immediately ran to Twitter with this idea, that the hardest thing that I saw going forward watching that documentary, and I'm only two episodes in, is the realization that, you know, it may take another 10, 20, 30 years, but within that 10, 20, 30 years, we'll have another Ken Burns. And this time it'll be a documentary simply called Afghanistan. And there'll be another documentary called Iraq. And there will be interviews with survivors from both sides. And maybe the thesis then will be that everything that's wrong with our country today, because this is what Ken Burns says, all the problems that we have today in the United States in 2017 can be traced directly back to the fact that we didn't adequately deal with the problems we created within our own body politic out of Vietnam. Now, I'm going to give the whole series time to play its way out before I decide whether he was right or wrong on that. But it seems rather a great leap. Because on this program, as you know, we have talked from time to time about every time you find something that is disastrously wrong with this country, you can sort of fold space and go back. And there's the smiling face and the greasy head of Ronald Wilson Reagan, old 666 himself. So I guess in turn you'd have to say that Ronald Reagan was brought about by Vietnam. Now, some of these things I think you can make a compelling argument for. You know, had Johnson not ruined his presidency with Vietnam, his idea that we would start with Medicare with a retirement age at 65, and a couple of years later the Congress would say, well, that's too old, let's make it 60, and a few years after that they'd make it 55, and then they'd make it 50, and pretty soon we'd have universal single-payer health care? Yeah, maybe. Because that's a compelling argument. But I'll also tell you that I'm disturbed by the fact that he can, you know, in the first two episodes, you get past the Kennedy assassination. And he refers to, Kennedy didn't see the outcome of the coup in Vietnam because, and he says, because in November of 1963, Kennedy was murdered. Pink little ears perked up at that word, murdered. And I've read articles about how absolutely, obsessively choosy Ken Burns is about words. And so you can bet that by the time it's been handed off, by the time the script has been handed off to the voiceover guy, and you know one thing, I was really kind of grateful for the fact that in the first episode there was no tinkling piano in the background playing those endearing young charms. Da 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 da. No. Then no mournful fiddle playing. Well, son of a bitch, the second episode opened up and there was that goddamn piano. I'm a cynical prick, you know that? But I pay attention to the language because I know that Ken Burns has proudly said that he is an absolute authoritarian asshole when it comes to, you know, his final say-so on what gets said and not said. So there he is describing the Kennedy assassination, and he changes that from an assassination to a murder. Now, what's interesting is we're going to get a few years into Vietnam, and we're going to get to My Lai, the My Lai massacre. But when it comes to the people who were slaughtered by American troops in that village, as led by Lieutenant William Calley, guess what that becomes? The people who were slaughtered in the My Lai massacre, Ken Burns deliberately insisted on the use of the word killed instead of murdered. Is there even a good faith discussion to be had over whether the people who were slaughtered at My Lai were simply killed? I mean, the goddamn helicopter fell out of the sky and... You know, and it landed on some Vietnamese peasants, and they were killed. The definition of murder, legally, and not just from a civilian standpoint, but from a military standpoint, is pretty goddamn clear. And there's really no debate to be had about what happened to the people at My Lai. They were murdered, but Ken Burns says they were just killed. Maybe they were out on the 405 or the 902 or the 6 7/8, and they got into a fender bender, and there was one of those chain reaction things, and they were just killed. not brutally gunned down by American troops who knew that they were civilian, knew that they were peasants, knew that they were unarmed, and slaughtered them anyway. As we were so frequently reminded back during the great Clinton penis hunt, words, my friends, words mean things. Yeah, I haven't seen a lot of response to what Bernie had to say in Fulton, Missouri today. Although I would hazard a guess that the bellicose hardcore hilarians are extremely pissed off. Just the same way that the bellicose hardcore burners were extremely pissed off when Hillary wrote a book and went on a book tour. It's your fault. Hi, oh look, we've got President Trump because you fuckers can't decide whose fault it is. Thanks a bunch. So, just a few thoughts. Of course, the most looming international crisis of the moment, North Korea, in which the Clementine Caligula declared that he was willing to murder. Hi, Ken Burns. I'm Bob Kincaid. I just wanted to show you how to use that word. Numbnuts Nero said that he was willing to murder 25 million people, probably 99.9% of whom are absolutely innocent of anything. But, you know, Marcus Aurelius said he was willing to murder them. Well, I'll have no choice. Yeah, I know. Silent R. Lamar says, come on, Bob, you know they have to show America in the best light. Yeah. But anyway, Bernie said, North Korea, another example of failure, highlights the potential for corruption in a system of government control. I'm sorry. No, he didn't. That's a response. No, the treasurer of Missouri, Eric Schmidt, who, of course, is from among the maggots, in the Fulton newspaper critiqued it. He said, North Korea, another example of failure, highlights the potential for corruption in a system of government control. Sanders may offer a watered-down version of these policies, but the realization of his far-left ideas would mark the start of a slippery slope toward inevitable decline. I think we've got the pretty... I think we've got the inevitable decline part down pat. This dipshit treasurer, dipshit state treasurer of Missouri, Eric Schmidt. I hope Sanders details a vision of robust American leadership and embraces the capitalist democracy that has enabled the pursuit of happiness since our nation's founding. You dumb bastard. There was no capitalism at the time of our nation's founding. The Wealth of Nations had only been published in 1776, as written by Adam Smith, and it had not gained wide acceptance or even readership 11 years later, or 21 years later, in 1787. No, what Bernie said was that far too often American intervention and the use of American military power has produced unintended consequences which have caused incalculable harm. Kind of hard to argue with that, isn't it? Goddamn Debbie Wasserman Schultz! But it was pretty clear from his remarks in Fulton, Missouri, that he far prefers, as should we all, the use of diplomacy. As opposed to the use of the power that flows from the muzzle of a gun. I did think it was particularly interesting that that Bernie asked the audience to, and he told them, and many of them probably didn't even know about it, the United States sponsored overthrow of Mohammad Mossadegh in Iran in 1953. And he asked the audience there, what do you suppose would have happened if we hadn't done that? Well, you don't get the Shah. And that means you don't get the Savick. And that means that the only people who suffer, and of course, you know, it was, let's understand parallels, it was Charles de Gaulle pissing and moaning and bitching in France, telling the United States that we, by God, had to support France's return to try to take control of its former colonial possession in Indochina, or else, you know, this threat, you know, this was a threat, or else, you know, France may have to go within the zone of influence of the Soviet Union. Really, Charles de Gaulle, you want to do that? You're going to be the first motherfucker up against the wall. Shut up, you stupid. But we didn't do that. We placated him and patted him on his little head. And a few years later, again, thanks to colonialism, Winston Churchill is hollering at Truman and then at Eisenhower, the United States has got to help us get those little wogs in Persia back under control. The nerve of them thinking our thinking they own the oil that's under their sand. Of course, anybody who wasn't, you know, anybody who wasn't really thoroughly 100% British was to Winston Churchill a wog. Look, there are arguments to be made that Winston Churchill was a fucking war criminal, you know, because. But I did think it interesting that Bernie asked people who probably knew nothing about the 1953 CIA-sponsored coup against Mohammad Mossadegh to think about where we would be if we had not so righteously fucked that up. He also talked about post-World War One, the post-World War One peace, and what a screw job that was. He brought up the Marshall Plan, which Bernie actually understands what it was, whereas when he brought up the Marshall Plan, the Marmalade Mugabe thought it had something to do with Matt Dillon. Yeah. Here's a fun thought. Mentioning the Marshall Plan made me think of the Berlin airlift. I wonder if the United States in the year 2017 is capable of another Berlin airlift. Not for Berlin. Berlin doesn't need it. But I wonder if we are. Because you know who needs a Berlin airlift? You know who needs a massive fleet of C-130 cargo planes flying in and out every hour on the hour, maybe every half hour? You know who needs the drone of those engines overhead probably every day for the next 6-9 months, maybe a year? Puerto Rico. Where the power's not going to be on for months. Where we have exercised colonial power for decades and decades and decades. in a form of sort of benign neglect. There's no talk of that. Because there's no talk anymore in the era of conservative republicanism of being capable of doing great things. Not capable. But Puerto Rico needs help, and they need it quick. Yeah, I know, Silent R. Lamar. A century, Bob. I know. And it should be an opportunity for us to prove our goodness. To show the world that we can mobilize in ways that the rest of the world simply cannot. A climate change induced Berlin airlift. Anybody talking about that?
No.
Sorry. No. Not even a little bit. And where is Comrade Kumquat in all of this? Well, he's all excited because he gets to leave Washington, D.C. again. He's headed down to Talabama tomorrow. Because he's going to be the guest of honor at a campaign rally for Big Luther Strange, who is running against Roy Tolamore in the Republican primary to fill the seat vacated by United States Attorney General Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III. That's very true. That's very true, Carol Baker. Those Puerto Ricans are Americans, citizens. Just more of the wrong colors, though. And Larry, with an observation, says, I need to break a revelation to everybody. The USA has severe internal issues. I just thought you needed to know, LOL. Yes, Trump will be right on helping Puerto Rico with their recovery, especially if Trump is allowed to build a resort in San Juan. I wish that was a joke. It isn't. Not even a little bit. So, here we are at the close of the filibobster. We've got I remind you, we've got only $75 to raise this evening, and we've got a $200 challenge on the table. The sum total and effect of which is if that $200 challenge is met, we get finished with fundraising for tonight, and bonus, we're done with fundraising for the week. A day ahead. How freaking cool is that? Unfortunately, an hour and 9 minutes into the program, we are still at what? That's right, zero. So hopefully it won't stay that way. It would be lovely if it didn't stay that way. But we do need to take a little break. It being a Thursday, Thorn in the Side Thursday, of course, we have the Green News Report, courtesy of Brad Friedman and Desi Toyin. I always enjoy it. I hope you do too. And a long-distance dedication going out to the Mango Mussolini, Dolt 45, headed to Alabama to campaign for Big Luther Strange against Roy Tolamore. Oh, by the way, guess who's behind Roy Tolamore? Breitbart and Steve Bannon. Oh, I hope this just gets really, really viciously nasty. I hope it doesn't hurt too little.
It's too much. It's too much to hope that that Republicans would bring as much pissy vitriol to their primary fight as, say, the hardcore burners and hilarians brought to the ones. Goddamn Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Goddamn Bernie! But it sure would be fun if they did. And cracked that party like a fucking egg. And actually created some fighting space for Doug Jones, who's already got the Democratic nomination and has a pretty good track record. You know one of the things that Doug Jones did, who's running for Senate from Alabama as a Democrat? You know what he did one time? Well, back during the Clinton years, he was appointed to be a United States attorney in Alabama. And he was confirmed by the Senate. And he looked at the Birmingham church bombing from 1963, in which the Klansmen who murdered little girls got away with it. And you know what Doug Jones did? Doug Jones wasn't okay with that. And so he prosecuted the bombers all those years later. And he put them in prison. How about that? Wouldn't it be lovely if the birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, the maggots and trumpansies and the Republicans and libertarians all just went at each other, tearing at each, picking at scabs and grabbing at flesh until they hated each other so much that Alabama could actually have a sane member of the United States Senate? How cool would that be? And guess what? Oh, I know, I'll get an email telling me how insufficiently ideologically pure I am for even mention this. But Joe Biden's going to go down and campaign on Doug Jones's behalf, which is pretty cool. But we're going to call the Secretary of Jesus Barack out of retirement for just a minute to see if maybe he could get in touch with Barack Obama and say, Jesus, Barack, you mean you haven't already decided to go down and hold 15 or 20 fucking rallies in Alabama to try to break the solid South? Jesus, Barack. Because going down and holding rallies for the guy who actually put the Birmingham church bombers in fucking prison is a pretty good idea. And it might motivate a significant number of voters in that sadly benighted, but in many ways, beautiful place. Sorry, it's still kind of, I got a soft spot in my heart for Alabama. All the elements that went into the creation of me happened there. But wouldn't that be cool? So, you know, long distance dedication going out to Comrade Kumquat as he travels tomorrow to Alabama to campaign on behalf of Big Luther Strange, who I'm sure would happily go to Washington and try to take health care away from as many people as he possibly could. This one's for you, Donnie, dimwit. Five deferments. This is for you, Donnie, from the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces look ugly when you're alone. Women seem wicked when you're unwanted. Streets are uneven when you're down, when you're strange. Faces come out of the rain when you're strange. No one remembers your name when you're strange. When you're strange, when you're strange. People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces look ugly when you're alone. Women seem wicked when you're unwanted. Streets are uneven when you're down. When you're strange, no one remembers your name. When you're strange, when you're strange, when you're strange.
It's Thursday, September 21, 2017.
Some areas could be without power for 4 to 6 months.
Hurricane Maria devastates Puerto Rico.
The nation's president warned every minute counts to save lives.
Hundreds dead in second Mexico earthquake in 2 weeks. California cities sue the fossil fuel industry for climate change damages. Plus,
we must move forward. We must continue advancing because climate change is not stopping.
French President Emmanuel Macron takes the lead, rallying the United Nations on climate action.
All of those rallies and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I've never seen winds like this in Puerto Rico. You take a look at what's happening there, and it's just one after another.
I know. Who could have predicted it, Mr. President? This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, the deadly hurricane season continues to continue.
Yes, it does. In the Caribbean, Hurricane Maria made a direct hit on Puerto Rico as a powerful Category 4 on Wednesday, the strongest storm to hit the U.S. island territory since 1932.
And the third strongest storm to ever hit the U.S.
It caused extensive flooding and knocked out power to 100% of the island's electric grid. The mayor of San Juan said infrastructure and electrical grid repairs could take 4 to 6 months. Puerto Rico is already grappling with a deep financial crisis and faces more than $1 billion in damages from Hurricane Irma alone. The economies of all of these Caribbean island nations hit by Irma and Maria are reliant on tourism, and full recovery will take years.
Well, no worries. I'm sure the Republicans in Congress will be happy to send disaster aid to the U.S. territory of Puerto Rico.
The Washington Post reports that 2017 has already had more than a year's worth of named storms based on the long-term average, and we are only midway through hurricane season. What's remarkable about the Atlantic hurricanes of 2017 is both their intensity and how rapidly they're intensifying, getting really bad really fast. According to the acting deputy director of the National Hurricane Center, 2017 has seen more frequent rapid intensification events than usual. Hurricane Maria may also have set a record for rapid intensification for an Atlantic storm. Meanwhile, a second powerful earthquake in 2 weeks rocked central Mexico as a 7.1 that followed an even larger 8.1 quake that hit the nation's west coast. Tuesday's earthquake has killed more than 200 people, mostly in collapsed buildings, with the death toll expected to rise. Now, there's a common thread here in the impact of these disasters, and that's why we focus on infrastructure and building codes, because building codes and well-designed, resilient infrastructure can mark the difference between life and death, both during and in the dangerous aftermath of a disaster. Both play a crucial role in every community's ability to recover from future disasters, including the accelerating impacts of climate change.
This latest earthquake hit on the 32nd anniversary of the 1985 earthquake that killed some 10,000 people in Mexico City. And while the death toll for this latest one is expected to rise to as many as 1,000, it could be the building codes that have changed since 1985 that ended up saving a lot of lives.
And not speaking of climate change was U.S. President Donald Trump. In his first ever address to the United Nations General Assembly this week in New York, Trump had plenty to say about rogue nations that put the rest of the world at risk, but nothing about the growing threat of climate change. However, French President Emmanuel Macron, in his first address to the United Nations, subtly criticized Trump's decision to withdraw the U.S. from the Paris Climate Agreement. He said that voluntary agreement is not negotiable.
Humankind must defend itself by protecting itself. That agreement is not up for renegotiation. We will not backtrack. We will continue to implement the Paris Agreement.
Macron is allocating 5 billion euros for climate action in France, and he called on cities and states around the world to do their part in transitioning away from fossil fuels. To that end, California Governor Jerry Brown, at the Climate Week side conference in New York, announced that the U.S. Climate Alliance, a coalition of 15 states, including New York and California, is on track to cut their carbon emissions 25% by 2025. Brown encouraged other nations to hold fast to their commitments, saying, quote, other countries ought to listen. The U.S. is in all the way on the Paris Accord.
Just not our president, but let's not mention that.
Finally, on Wednesday, San Francisco and Oakland, California became the first major U.S. cities to sue the fossil fuel industry over climate change. Their suit alleges that oil, gas, and coal producers not only caused the greenhouse gas emissions driving rising sea levels, but did so knowingly. And it seeks to hold the industry accountable for billions of dollars in property damages caused by rising seas now and in the future from flooding and coastal erosion.
We sure are counting on the judiciary to save this country and this world a whole lot of late, aren't we?
I'll take what we can get.
Indeed. For much more on all of those stories and many that we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
The more you ignore me, the closer I get. You're wasting your time.
The more you ignore 23 minutes past the hour, and it is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn for this 21st day of September 2017. I'm Bob Kincaid, and Jim has been waiting patiently for some time now for me to finish the filibobster. Hey, Jim.
Patience has not been laid. Did you know that?
Well, no, I didn't. I thought it was... never mind. Let me ask you a question before we get going.
Certainly.
I was thinking... I actually thought of you while I was watching those first couple of episodes of the Vietnam documentary.
Yes, sir.
Because for all the detail that Ken Burns includes... And maybe this was just inconvenient to his thesis that both sides do it, because he said, you know, early on he says, he has his narrator say, Vietnam was the fault of five U.S. presidents, Democrat and Republican alike, which is pretty easily picked apart early on. But, you know, we get that mention about, and John Kennedy was murdered in November 1963. And there's no mention of what John Kennedy had by that point in time begun to think about Vietnam. But I remember conversations you and I have had about the speech that he had tucked into the breast pocket of his suit coat on that fateful day. There was a little bit about Vietnam in that speech, wasn't there, Jim?
As I recall, yes. I don't have it in front of me because, to tell you the truth, every time I read it, I just have to put it away, and I just don't want to think of it.
Because it's heartbreaking. Because
he talked about my country died.
And but in terms of the actual content of that speech, it looked like he was on his way to getting out of Vietnam, didn't it?
He was. He realized a bad investment when he saw it. I mean, he was over there as a congressman on a fact-finding mission, and he realized exactly what a brutal dictator, what's his name was, the one that was, I think they put him and his brother in the back of a truck after they murdered him. I mean, he knew that, and he knew that this guy was nothing more than just another Batista, taking everything he could out of the people, giving nothing back to them. And he realized that the continuation of that regime was not going to be something that we could support, morally or legally. Another dictator.
And, you know, he'd already been sold down the river once by the CIA on the Bay of Pigs, and he had to take, he said, failure is an orphan, but success has a million fathers, but failure is an orphan. So he took responsibility for the Bay of Pigs. But the fact of the matter was he was lied to, and among other things in the aftermath of that, he said that he would like to break the CIA up into a million pieces, did he not?
He certainly did. And there were a couple of organizations that had fucked him in the ass, too, and given him bad information. I mean, you know, he got rid of Alan Dulles and some of those other, you know, sacred cows up there. He pissed a lot of people off up in the corridors of power. I mean, I'm not trying to go Oliver Stone on you, but, you know, a lot of what he said in that movie is quite true. Kennedy had a lot of enemies. He had enemies from certain agencies in Washington. He had enemies in, down south or in Texas. And that's the reason the day that he went into his last day, that he said, I think it was to Mrs. Kennedy, when he saw the paper with his profile pictures on there, he said, we're really going into nut country today. And it certainly was. But, you know, he took a risk. He didn't use the bubble top. I don't know if the bubble top would have stopped those bullets or not, but at least it may
have. Well, they wouldn't have had a clear shot, whoever they were, not he was.
I know, but he always took those risks. He was a daredevil. He really was. I mean, throughout his youth, he had been through such health crises and stuff like that, but he just had to be more than he really needed to be. And the man was a hero, militarily and politically, in my opinion. I mean, he wasn't perfect, but he came the closest to it that I've ever seen any president come to. That's for damn sure. And as far as going into the nut country is concerned, and this thing in Alabama, if I were Michelle Obama, I would sit on Barack and say, you're not going anywhere near that place.
Yeah, well, there's that side of it, too.
Because you talk about nut country. Don't you think somebody down there would love to take a crack at him?
Well, there's a lot of places in this country where somebody would. But there's tremendous value, and this is my larger point, Jim. If you can crack the solid South anywhere, the whole damn thing will begin to fall apart like the clay-footed colossus that it is.
Well, I hope you're right, because I'll tell you, it's held together pretty well so far. And, Bob, I'm going to tell you, I'm from South Carolina. I'm from the solid South. I don't know if you are. Well, you are too, I guess.
Yeah, I am.
You know?
There was a time when the it's a strange pathology of the South that the South cannot tolerate two parties. You know, for the term "solid South," Jim, originates in the fact that after the terrorist insurgency that defeated Reconstruction, the South voted Democrat, conservative, mm-hmm. Southern, white, racist Democrat for 100 years.
They did.
Until Ronald Reagan. And with with the signing of the Civil Rights Act, Lyndon Johnson said, "We have lost the South for a generation, and now we're into the second or the third generation in which the South is lost."
He did, and he was right, absolutely.
And but it became it never stopped being a political monolith. It went from solidly Democratic to solidly Republican. And that's, you know, that's something for the sociologists and the political scientists, I suppose.
Well, I guess it's above my pay grade, yeah.
And mine, too.
I can throw you reasons, but I'm not going to weary anybody with them. But I think I can understand a little bit about what happened. And, you know, in the South, the Democrats, they weren't supported. Well, you had the civil rights movements and things of that nature, and of course, you know, a lot of federal intervention, and plus that, plus Nixon's, you know, Strom Thurmond running as a Dixiecrat in 1948, and you know, you had Nixon and his Southern strategy and all that stuff. He pretty much summed those people up pretty well.
Well, and maybe it's not above our pay grade after all, Jim. Maybe that's it. Maybe it is that the South is more particularly prone to being manipulable based upon, and it has a lot to do with ignorance, and it has a lot to do with education, and you know exactly what I'm talking about. Maybe it is the fact that in the South there are no real high-minded political debates. It's all just based upon the most pernicious fears and bigotries.
Well, I think you have that above the north of the Mason-Dixon line, too, Bob. You've got people up there who are just as bad as north of there.
Oh, I agree, but it's not monolithic.
I mean, Christie is pretty monolithic myself, but that's...
Well, I think I don't think I'm... you know, lithic means stone, and I think of him as more monogelatinous, but, you know, we'll just have to fight in the alley over that one, Jim.
Nah, that's okay. We'll have a drink before we do that. Well, I mean, you know, pretty much that's the way I've always looked at it. I mean, it seems like the whole country, both north and south, has its... there have been very serious problems, and they have to do with a number of different things. But as far as cracking the solid South is concerned, that's going to be a hard one. That's for damn sure. That's going to be a hard nut to crack, because you've got people down there who are basically, they're just not going to permit that to happen. That's just the way they are. I mean, I was brought up that way. I was... school and this, that, and the other about the War of Northern Aggression, and I can remember listening to grandparents and who had listened to their parents and listened to their parents and, oh, Lord, talking about what happened after the Civil War and the Reconstruction period. And I remember my dad used to say, if only Abraham Lincoln had lived, it may have been a lot different. Because Lincoln wanted to, you let the South back in, you know, with malice toward none and charity for all.
Mm-hmm.
But then you had the black Republicans, like that wig-wearing asshole, Thaddeus Stevens, and a couple others, who wanted to punish the South, and they placed it under, you know, military districts, each headed by a major general, and a lot of things, well, were done that,
no, this is where, in terms of history, you and I disagree, because I see Reconstruction as a necessary precursor to having full, you know, a fully functioning polity in the post Civil War South.
Well, did it? Did the Reconstruction of the radical Republicans at that time, did it produce that? I think not.
Well, it didn't really get a chance because of the post-war Confederate insurrection led by people like Nathan Bedford Forrest.
Goddamn, he only was in the Klan for 1 year and then dissolved it. And also, good friend,
the Klan did not dissolve. There was actually, you know, who was the Confederate general who was lambasted by the Lost Causers because he actually stood with federal troops against an uprising in New Orleans, and the uprising of which caused outrage when they took down the memorial to the terrorist uprising just recently. I can't remember which general it was, but it was.
I can't either.
And all across the South, there was a terrorist insurgency in the wake of the Civil War that was caused by the fact that freed African American slaves were being integrated into the polity, and that was intolerable to them, to the white power structure, and that's why they launched that insurrection.
Well, the thing about it is this: it just the way I feel about it is this: Reconstruction, in which the South was created under military rule, lasted from 65 to 1876 with Brother B. Hayes, when the states were allowed to come back in and, you know, things were allowed to calm down. And I guess it was during that period from after the Civil War until, Rutherford B. Hayes in 76 there were a number of things that happened that engendered a lot of hard feelings that still
exist. Well, and among other things, the Rutherford B. Hayes becomes president specifically because he agrees to end Reconstruction and to end efforts to integrate freed African slaves into full citizenship. That was the agreement that was struck.
Well, you know, sometimes you have to make a deal, but you don't want to make a deal. But sometimes you have to do that because he did not want to have another repeat of any type of other insurrection or any other type of thing. He was trying to put the country back together.
And, you know, when Garfield comes along, that's a particularly fascinating moment in American history, because the people who were vying for the Republican nomination at the Chicago Convention, the Republican Party was deeply split. Garfield gets up and gives a speech, and the whole convention looks at him and goes, "That's the guy we need to nominate."
Well,
and the centerpiece of his presidential campaign was a promise to fulfill the promise of freedom to the people who had been freed after as a result of the Civil War. And oddly enough, it wasn't, as it was the case with John Wilkes Booth, it wasn't some damn pissed-off Southerner that put paid to him, but the combination of a mentally deranged fool with a gun, and then, secondarily and moreover, his own goddamn doctors. You know, Garfield was killed by medical malpractice. He would not have died of that bullet wound in the modern era.
Well, if they had had some type of device, they tried to locate a device, I think, with some type of precursor of the X-ray machine.
They brought in Alexander Graham Bell?
Mm-hmm, they did. But the trouble is, you know, the doctors were just, you know, I even think they bled the man, if I'm not mistaken. They may have applied leeches.
They stuck... I'm not trying to be gross here. People have their meals during the various time zones in which this program happens live. They stuck his dinner up his ass.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
That's some of the craziness that went on with it. But Garfield fully intended to make the Congress, with the, even with the southern states on board, to make the Congress bring freed African slaves into civil society. And
Bob, that sort of thing can't be done by a presidential decree.
No, but it can be done by a president and Congress passing laws.
Well, even those laws will have to be obeyed.
As we saw with Reconstruction.
I mean, you know exactly how effective the law is. It's only effective unless there are people who are around, one to enforce it and the other to grudgingly obey it. And they will have to obey it only at the point of the bayonet in many cases. And that's just the way things are. And they still are to a certain extent, or to a great extent. But, you know, going back to Alabama, I don't know what's going to happen down there. Trump's going to go down there and campaign for, I guess he just wants a little strange, doesn't he? He's just got those big hands. So he just can't keep them up. He's almost a little strange. But I wish President Obama could go down there, but I certainly would not advise him to do so. I think that man's put enough of his life in trying to do as best he can for this country. He made mistakes, but he sure is a hell of a lot better than what we got now. God damn.
Well, it almost defeats the ability of the English language to cope with it. But I mean, the reality is, he and I guess U.S. Attorney General Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III are firmly in Big Luther Strange's camp. What's interesting is that Roy Tolamore is supported by Breitbart and the skinheads and the Klansmen and the Nazis and Steve Bannon.
Well, you know, that is a curious admixture, isn't it? You put all that together in a pot and you might have something that might blow up right in their faces.
Oh, I hope they get real busy and just tear each other's faces off.
Yeah, you said that. I agree with that totally. Absolutely.
And leave the Alabama Republican Party in a heap of smoldering ash.
Well,
but that's too much to hope for, Jim, because whoever wins that will have the support. Because, see, Republicans are far more organized than Democrats can ever be. While the hardcore hilarians and the hardcore burners are over here picking at each other's scabs and we're being destroyed by a common enemy, they're having too much fun with that, though. Well, the Republicans win a nasty primary's over. They go, well, you know, that was a nasty primary. You know what? We're still going to have to get together behind our nominee and see if we can't get him elected.
Uh-huh.
And that's exactly, look, the pri- you know, look at the tawdry, shitty things that Trump said about Jeb Bush and about Marco Rubio and about Ted Cruz and about all of his Republican opponents in the primary. And guess what they all did?
Kissed his ass.
They got in line, kissed his ass, until they had little brown spots on each and every one of their collective noses, and they did what Republicans do. They voted Republican in lockstep.
That's right. That's right.
You know, he's got that hardcore cancerous knot of hard cases and dead enders, the maggots, and they'll vote for him under any circumstance.
Oh, yeah.
But that doesn't account for the other 17% of the vote that he got, or 18%. That's good, rock-ribbed, upstanding Christian moral values, family values, having Republican mainstream GOP base.
No, that's just basically where they are. I know I'm related to one.
And the, you know, and those
my blood.
Those
yeah,
never
I know the, exactly what you're talking about.
Those never Trump Republicans. Guess what they did in November?
They voted for Donald Trump.
You goddamn right they did.
Yeah, they did. Of course they did. And you know, like we've had this conversation before, how you know you've laughed. You know, I don't belong to any party. I'm a Democrat. Well, I never have laughed at that. I thought it was just pathetic.
No, it was true when Will Rogers said it, and it's true now.
Well, to me, it's pathetic. These people are so disjointed and so disaffected and so disconnected, they don't realize the necessity of doing what the Republicans have done and use their page from their playbook.
And the sad thing is that while it's easy to say, well, you know, 12% of Bernie's voters went on to vote for, you know, Trump. Well, guess what? Back in 2008, Jim, 24% of Hillary's voters didn't vote for Barack Obama. So, you know, for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God, and I know you've heard that before.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I've heard all these people were picking, they were picking with you about Jill Stein, and then all of a sudden about I got to burn, this, that, and the other. And I said, okay, fine. It's time for you to grow up and realize that Jill Stein and Bernie aren't going to be the candidate. It's going to be Hillary Clinton. And if you don't want that Donald Trump in there, you better, you know, hold your nose and say, vote for him.
Oh, I can't vote for the lesser evil. I can never vote for the lesser evil.
Lock her up. Lock her up. Or, you know.
But her emails.
Oh, shit.
Debbie Wasserman Schultz, goddamn DNC, they stole it from Bernie even after he'd already lost. They stole it after he lost.
Oh, God. I was like a yank every never mind. I'm not going to go there. But, you know, we saw what happened. And because of their lack of unity and because of the Republican cunning, they stole it. They did. They got it just the way they stole it in 2000 with the Electoral College. And they did that by being united, and they did that by being able to pull every string of power they could. That's just the way it is. And we've got this asshole up there now who is just absolutely beyond any call of or beyond any border of what I consider to be human justice or intelligence. I mean, the guy is making up countries in Africa that don't exist. What the fuck is that about? My
Jesus
Lord, excuse my language.
Well, no, he's just stupid.
Yeah, he is. I mean, you know, who in the hell writes a speech you're talking about teleprompter? I mean, are they trying to really make him look like an asshole? Somebody is. I mean, you know, I thought to myself when he did that, I said, mm-hmm, somebody has got it in for him, and he's got a disgruntled person up there, and they slip that in over him. And it made him look like an idiot.
And the funny thing, for all the emails I get about how, you know, it wasn't a hack, it was a leak. You know, talking about the DNC emails. It wasn't a hack, it was a leak. And, you know, these are the same people who believe in Pizzagate and that kind of silly shit. And, you know, poor Vlad Putin is just getting a bad rap. That Russian didn't do anything. It's going to be real fucking hard for him when the indictments start rolling out, because there's more Russia stuff every goddamn day.
Oh yeah,
I wonder how the purity police handles the fact that in Fulton, Missouri today, as I said in the first hour, Bernie Sanders stood on that stage and condemned Donald Trump for not condemning the Russians for messing with the election.
Yeah, well, you know why. I know why, you know why. Everybody else knows why. They're just looking at the situation. Because the Russians have said to him, we'll help bring you up, but if you fuck with us, we'll bring you down. And that's exactly where the parameters under which he's operating. That's exactly it.
I wonder what it would take to get Putin to actually allow the PP tape to be released. Not that it would make any difference to that 33% of hardcore hard case dead enders, but I wonder what it would take.
I think it would take. I don't know. Trump would really have to go back on that arcane deal that he struck with him about lifting all of the sanctions on Putin's money. Let me put it this way: Putin would release that tape any time that he thought it would create more discord and more mischief within the borders of this country. So, I mean, you know, he's just an axe up looking for a place to happen with that thing. And when Trump ceases to be of any use to him, he'll let it go, and he'll throw Trump under his big bus because that's just the way he operates. I mean, he has no morals, no scruples. He doesn't have any compassion for anybody. And, of course, I can't say too much on this side of the pond, but, I mean, you know, look at Putin's background. He's a killer. He was raised to kill. He participated in killing.
I've got, you know what, I've got something here that you might find interesting. It won't take very long, Jim, but you may have heard it already. Maybe you haven't. It won't take but a second here.
Sure.
I got to find. Here it is. This is a video that was recently released with the voice of God, Morgan Freeman, in it. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
This is a compelling piece of audio. And I don't know how many people have heard this, but it deserves hearing. Let me just fire this up.
We have been attacked. We are at war. Imagine this movie script. A former KGB spy, angry at the collapse of his motherland, plots a course for revenge. Taking advantage of the chaos, he works his way up through the ranks of a post-Soviet Russia and becomes president. He establishes an authoritarian regime, then he sets his sights on his sworn enemy, the United States. And like the true KGB spy he is, he secretly uses cyber warfare to attack democracies around the world. Using social media to spread propaganda and false information, he convinces people in democratic societies to distrust their media, their political processes, even their neighbors. And he wins. Vladimir Putin is that spy, and this is no movie script. We need our president to speak directly to us and tell us the truth. We need him to sit behind the desk in the Oval Office and say, my fellow Americans, during this past election, we came under attack by the Russian government. I've called on Congress and our intelligence community to use every resource available to conduct a thorough investigation to determine exactly how this happened. The free world is counting on us for leadership. For 241 years, our democracy has been a shining example to the world of what we can all aspire to. And we owe it to the brave people who have fought and died to protect this great nation and save democracy. And we owe it to our future generations to continue the fight.
Join the committee to investigate Russia. Join the fight.
Pretty powerful, huh?
Actually, well, I think I said pretty much a lot of that the other night, did I not?
Mm-hmm. You absolutely did. And that committee to investigate Russia, the guy behind that is Rob Reiner. No, you know, he's not exactly a hardcore right winger, Reiner. But what was hilarious was the Russian response to that, Jim.
Oh, I can imagine it was something.
The Kremlin, through one of its mouthpieces in the Moscow Times, did a nice smear job on Morgan Freeman. They said, many creative people fall prey to emotional stress without real information about real state of things. This was Dmitry Peskov, a Kremlin spokes creep. And he said, with time, this will pass. And then Maria Zakharova, who is a spokes creep for the Russian Foreign Ministry, said, Morgan Freeman was framed, just as Colin Powell was framed. We'll find out who stands behind story faster than we learned about contents of vial.
Mm-hmm. Well, there it is. Pravda, give us the truth. Is it white task or is it red task? Or what it is, I don't know.
What but, is it? There's no truth in Pravda, and there's no Pravda in truth, or no, I don't know. No,
there you go.
No toss in it. Pravda, no Pravda in truth. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly.
I can never keep it, but the thing is, videos like this drive little Putin fangirls like Caitlin Johnstone absolutely batshit.
Why?
Oh, because Russia is our friend, and this is McCarthyism. And see, she thinks she's a real leftist, and that means that she has to stand behind Russia because communism. But nobody ever told her that Russia isn't communist anymore. I mean, the stupid runs really, really deep. And I don't know what... For all I know, some of the little hardcore burners are probably out there burning Bernie in effigy for saying that Russia meddled in the election today. I mean, he made no bones about it. He said it straight up, and that's got to be sending some of the hardcores right around the bend.
I would think so. Jesus. Absolutely. I mean, you know, this whole business that's coming out with Trump's lieutenants, we'll just wait and see. And, you know, I can say this. This is not going to end well. This is not going to end well at all. You know, there's something bad going to come down the road with this. And I just have this feeling of trepidation about the outcome.
Administration. Well, have you heard the latest from Kim Jong bad haircut?
No, what did he say?
He has said, Carol Baker provided this to me, responding to Trump's remarks at the United Nations, Kim Jong bad haircut said that Trump's threat to totally destroy North Korea those are the words of, quote, a mentally deranged behavior. And in further translation, he said, I will surely and definitely tame the mentally deranged U.S. dotard with fire.
And I believe that he will. If he can only get the backing of China... Trump said in his speech that he had the backing of China and Russia, and we know that's bullshit. And just like he said the other day about the president of Mexico calling him,
that was
bullshit.
A lie.
Yep, the man just cavitates on lies. He just goes through the water like a submarine that's completely out of control. That's where he.
But the thing is, Kim doesn't have to do anything. Except sit back and watch Trump make a fool of himself.
Exactly.
And make idle, blusterous threats. The problem arises when he realizes he's painted himself into a corner, and he's got no way out. That's when he becomes, if he is not already, the most dangerous man on planet Earth.
You got it, buddy. Listen, this is we've gone the whole route here, but I will say two things. I want to say, Melania gave this big to-do about women's rights. Well, it's really funny because her husband had just repealed an executive order of Barack Obama that wanted to address the issue of women being underpaid, but Trump just rescinded that EO of President Obama.
Right,
and it really pissed me off when he did that, and I called him a poltroon on my email, and I got some of the damnedest remarks back from some people I knew in South Carolina.
Yeah, people who damn well know what poltroon means when it's said by somebody from South Carolina.
Yeah, and the other thing is this is totally different, and this sort of thing really warms the cockles of my heart, and it's on my Facebook today, and there's a group called the Comeback Kid Animal Edition, or the Comeback Kids for Animals, and they had this pony on there who had been so neglected that his hoofs, I didn't realize, and I've been around horses all my life, but they've always been taken care of. This pony's hoofs had grown to where they looked like talons.
Yeah, if they don't get worked, and you know, out in the wild, a horse will keep its hooves trimmed back simply by the action of running and walking and so forth.
Exactly, but this one had not, and it was just.
And it cripples them. It cripples them. It's heartbreaking to see. I've seen it.
And what they did with this pony was this: they took him in, they took a hacksaw to those hooves, and then they shaved him, and they took care of his wounds. And now he is one of the most beautiful horses you have ever seen in your life.
Nice.
And it was just, I have completely posted that on my timeline at least 4 or 5 times. And the other one is this, and I may have mentioned this to you, excuse me if I have. And it shows these two monsters like Godzilla and whatever his cousin's first name is, Megazilla. And they're in Washington, and Megazilla is looking at Godzilla. He sits in the part of the Capitol, and Megazilla is saying, "Oh hell, don't need that. It's full of nuts." I just love that. It's true. It's absolutely true. But the thing about the pony, and they go into other animal stories too, and it's just amazing that, you know, there is an element of society to whom there is appealing to the sense of our better nature, at least, if not to one another, at least to our four-footed friends.
Indeed.
I want you to look that up, and I want you to look at the process under which this horse went, this pony, and what he turned out to be. You know, I'm pretty cynical, about as cynical as you are. And every once in a while, there comes across my screen something like this that really just floors me.
I can understand. I mean, like I said, I've seen that in real life, and it's tragic. And when the animal in question gets the help needed, you can see the relief. They know
there is. You know, there's something good. At least there's something good around, something that will make you feel better. Because as of late, ever since November of last year, I've just been living in almost a political nightmare. And this is just something for which I well awoke and was glad that I hope, as far as, you know, that's concerned. But at least when I woke up and saw this a couple of days ago, it was extremely, meant a great deal to me. So I recommend it highly. You can pull it up and you can take a look and see what's happened here and what these people are doing. And this particular pony was in Belgium. I know you don't like Belgium, but...
No, I mean, that's just a running gag.
I know. But anyway, let me let you go. You got a lot of people who want to talk to you, and I'm sorry I took too much of your time here.
Oh, you didn't take up too much at all. That's what conversation is all about, Jim. You have yourself a good evening, my friend.
Well, you too. Hope you do, and happy first day of fall, and let's hope that we'll see still here tomorrow. You know, and tomorrow is supposed to be the big day.
No, that's Saturday.
Is it Saturday?
Yeah. Saturday is the day that Planet Nibiru shows up and Jupiter the Father, via Mary, the constellation Virgo, gives birth to Jesus all over planet Earth.
I wonder where this came from.
The deep and abiding desire of certain religion industry charlatans to own Gulfstream 5s, that's where it came from, Jim.
Oh, okay. Well, I can only say this. If they can read back in their own Bible, what does it say about that day? No one knows.
No one knows the day or the time, but it doesn't stop people from trying and trying to raise a buck out of it.
Well, you got a point there, that's for sure. Well, listen, on that note, you take care, and Saturday, be sure to wear clean drawers then.
Well, I absolutely will, and thank you for reminding me, kind sir.
You're certainly welcome. Good night, sir.
I've always been dependent upon the kindness of strangers. Yes, I will. There was a doctor's appointment today, so that mandates clean underwear, too. But I'll make sure there's clean underwear on Saturday as well. Yes. 3 minutes past the hour as we enter the third hour of the program for this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Jesus, clean underwear. No. Oh. Yeah. Uh-huh. let's keep it going. 4 minutes past the hour, and again, there's a $200 fundraising challenge on the table that has thus far gone absolutely unresponded to. Yeah, James points out via email, was that Long Street in New Orleans? It may have been, because he was roundly vilified by the Southern cause for not embracing the lost cause. And you know, a lot of the generals didn't. Yeah, shit. For all the evil that he was, Robert E. Lee did not embrace the lost cause. And specifically didn't even want statues put up to him. You know, that's the funny thing about these little Confederates and KKK people and whatever. They insist on keeping statues of Robert E. Lee up when Robert E. Lee didn't want statues. If you can't take it down because they're fucking racist, at least take them down because your hero didn't want them to be there. Robert E. Lee didn't want a Lee Highway. Jesus. But you know, enough of that. Let's run over and check in with Todd down in South Carolina, Stan. Hey, Todd.
Bob, how's it going, man?
It's going. How about you?
I'm good. I'm skid mark free, so that's a good thing, right?
Well, racing stripes, absolutely.
I mean, you know,
I haven't checked today or anything, but.
Jim is funny. Jim is great. That was funny. Hey, so.
Well, it's South Carolina night on the horn. You know, we got Jim native South Carolina, and now we got you in South Carolina.
And you know something? I think that we have bottomed out with this weirdo because people are being very nice now. I think after that United Nations speech, people are like, you know what? This guy's not, he's not worth it.
You're not telling me you've gone down to the Wiggling Pig there in Busted Knuckle, South Carolina, and heard Christ centered evangelical South Carolinians say that Donald Trump, bless his heart, God love him, he can't help it, which is how
I am really not saying that. What I'm saying is that in action, people are being really nice. Like I don't know if they're being nice because they think that maybe their guy's in charge, or being nice because they feel so guilty about their mistake that they feel like that one question IQ test. But it is something different. I've been moving around the state for the past few days, and I'm feeling something different. We'll see what happens. I mean, it's just this Rocket Man thing, this comment. I mean, it's just so remarkable in a bad way. It's just like a slap in the face. Like, this is our country.
Well, can I ask you another? I mean, and this is relevant to where you are. Can I ask you another question, Todd?
Sure, sure.
Now that Dolt 45 is playing this his little peekaboo game, his way, you know, reality TV. You know, tune in next. Well, you know, tune in next week. To find out if we're going to get out of the Iran deal. You know, everybody knows what the answer to that is. Because it's the answer he's been given. Well, am I mistaken, or is there a huge industrial manufacturing plant owned by the Boeing Corporation in South Carolina?
There is. It's in the Charleston area, yes.
Okay, that being the case, Boeing has inked a humongous deal with Iran to sell passenger airliners to Iran because, you know, Iran Air is still flying around on 1970s era aircraft. And so, lo and behold, this deadly threat to world peace and tranquility, we struck the deal with them. And we gave them back their money, and this is one of those things that the maggots can't understand. The money that was given to Iran was money that was theirs to begin with, that was frozen and more or less held hostage over here in the banks. We gave them back their money, and this desperate threat to world peace, what was the first thing they did with all that money they got back? They bought airplanes from the United States. So there's this humongous deal with Boeing that means Remember what did Trump campaign on top?
He said, "I'm going to make good deals. We're paying too much for those, you know." And
we're going to have jobs. And we're going to have jobs. Yep. Well, there's a lot of jobs on the line.
This is his shakedown. I forgot about that. You're right. You know what? This is his shakedown.
Well,
I'm so glad you brought that up, Bob.
The minute he bails out of the Iran deal, guess what happens to that Boeing contract?
He talks too much.
The minute he gets out of the Iran deal, that Boeing contract goes up in flames, and all the money goes to Airbus.
But how can he actually get out of the deal? Because in other words, it's not just us. There's four or five other nations, so we might be the fifth one or the sixth one, something like that. But everybody else, it's not just us.
No, but he can take the U.S. participation angle out of it, the primary impact of which is going to be that the money that we stole from Iran and then gave back to them will not be spent in the United States and will be spent with Airbus instead.
Well, this is his shakedown move.
But that's not going to play well. With those good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexuals down there in South Carolina. Because they want them jobs and they want that money.
And he wants his money. He told us he's greedy. He said that from the jump. He said that in the second debate or after the second debate or something like that.
But, I mean, Trump done promised them South Carolinistas that he was going to give them jobs. Well, those Boeing jobs are real jobs. That's not $8.15 an hour jobs. That's the kind of jobs where people have health insurance and make, you know, 30, 40, well, I mean, South, you know, maybe make $12 an hour in South Carolina, and that's some big money down there.
Oh, that's big money here. You can get yourself a 1982 Cadillac.
Yeah, I mean, that's working for BMW money.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, you're not being funny. You're funny, but it's true. I mean, the pay scale here is very low. It's disgusting.
Oh yeah, look, there's a Mercedes-Benz plant in Alabama, and compared to say, let's say somebody starts out with Ford at a plant in Michigan, they're going to start out at something way north of the $13 that Mercedes will start out a right-to-work state Alabamian at.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, but, you know, this is no big, you know, it is about the unions. They don't want unions here. And, you know, no collective bargaining, which is union. But, you know, that's how these folks do things. But, you know, like people say, his hardcore base is going to stay with him. But I think that his antics, I think, really have turned off a lot. I'm just saying, I was in Myrtle Beach recently, and I'm telling you, people, you know, and you have to go through little towns to get there. People were very, I mean, I'm like, why are these people being so nice? And I'm not the nicest looking guy, you know what I'm saying? I don't look like friendly. Like, you just don't come up and start talking.
Now we talk all the time. Everybody hears your voice. Don't sit here and try to pass yourself off as a scary black man, Todd. Now, damn it, that's just not nice.
Well, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like that. But whatever. I mean, you know, people are funny. You know, people.
You know, sure they are.
I'm not a scary black guy. No, I'm not. And I'm not even that black. I'm like middle. You know, whatever.
Kind of off.
All
coffee.
I'm saying is, yeah, you know, whatever, but. It's interesting. Something's going on. There's something. I think that maybe he's reached his tipping point. It's too much.
Well,
how can you steal your ass in the UN?
In terms of real money, if he pulls out of the Iran deal, according to an article that Asa just sent me, that's going to be $32 billion in Boeing sales that just disappear.
Yeah.
I mean, that ain't pissant money.
It's not. And like you said, so, I mean, we can withdraw our part, but everyone else agrees that they have fulfilled their obligation. They have complied with everything that this group, these groups of nations have said, you know, prescribed that you have to, that they have to do, you know, get rid of their certain amount of centrifuges. You know,
right.
Anything to,
well, and he gives the, he gives that speech at the UN, and he talks about how, this is how you know the weasel words are the tell on this. That the United States is using with regard to the Iran agreement. They're saying, well, they're living up to the letter of the law of the agreement, but they're not living up to the spirit of it because they're still testing missiles. And you want to just look at some of these dumbasses and go, hey, dumbass, have you seen the neighborhood they live in?
Right.
Talking about Iran. I would be working on missiles 24 hours a day, 7 days a week if I were Iran, because my next door neighbor is Iraq. My other next door neighbor is freaking Afghanistan and you know what I mean. And then I got the serene, majestic, royal, noble, high graciousness of Saudi Arabia down there that would slit my throat in my sleep if anybody wasn't watching. Yeah, I'm going to build me some missiles, some bitch.
It's a rough neighborhood. And let's really look at this. Who has Iran ever attacked first?
In the last 600 years, nobody.
Okay. So, right. So, you know, and honestly...
And the business about Yemen... Oh well, you know they're supporting rebels in Yemen. Fuck all. Who's providing the logistical supports and the weaponry for massive assaults on slaughtering civilians in Yemen? Shh. You know, don't tell the maggots. But it's not Iran. It's us. The U.S.
It's us. That is the biggest boondoggle. It's not a boondoggle if you're in the defense contract.
No,
industry.
It's good business.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like a free-for-all. So, you know, that's our between Afghanistan and Yemen now. And a lot of folks aren't, you know, that's the quiet thing. It's like Somalia used to be. You know, it was there, and unless you were paying attention, you really didn't know what was going on. But there's a lot of folks over there. There's folks from the National Guard over there. There's all kinds of folks over there in Yemen. Absolutely, and they're making the defense contractors.
You know, we got our little Orion spy planes, but our little Orion planes, kind of circling overhead because it's not like anybody down there can shoot them down, and we're the ones that are providing the logistical targeting information to the Saudis, who go fire, and all of a sudden, as Malloy would say, you know, a whole bunch of children disappear into a red mist.
Yeah,
that ain't
exactly.
The Iranians. Now this is by no means to say that I am supportive of the grand exalted majestic religious high exalted whatever of Iran. I'm not. The guy's a religious maniac. Okay, but
right.
I'm kind of where Muhammad Ali was with the Viet Cong. I ain't got no problem with no Viet Cong. Ain't no Viet Cong ever called me, right?
Did you see? Yeah, you know, we'd all seen that before, but that was
I got no beef. I got no beef with some guy, with a woman who pushes a flower cart in downtown Tehran.
Hey, he's not the most educated person, but guess what? That made a lot of sense. I mean, at the time he said that, Cassius Clay said that.
Yeah.
Right. Like, why the fuck should I go over there and I can't even goddamn get a sandwich in bumfuck Alabama without getting my ass beat, and you expect me to go over there and fight? Are you fucking serious?
Yeah, no. Kiss,
really?
Yeah. If he had gone ahead and said, kiss my black ass, it would have been fine.
God, what do you have to lose? Hey, you know, so that documentary, what happened is that I forgot the first night. I missed the first night. And you know what most of us have seen, most of us who listen to this show, most of us like history, we watch a lot of documentaries and stuff like that. And we've seen a bunch of Vietnam documentaries. And the cool thing was that it did show a little bit of...
Well, I mean, did you go back and watch episode one?
you know, I was in and out asleep. I did. And what would happen, see, they did the rewind, so through these ungodly hours, they start playing it over at like 11 o'clock at night.
Well, I mean, you can go online to pbs.org or you can use the app on a mobile device and just watch it.
I didn't know that. I mean, I knew the app, but I didn't know that they had released it yet. Because last time I went to the website, they just had trailers, but that was before I left. So I'm back home now, so I don't know.
I mean, to be fair, and this is not me talking about, you know, what a goddamn genius I am, because I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
But there was nothing in episode one I didn't know. In fact, I agree. In fact, there was stuff that was left out that I knew. But there's a particularly heartbreaking moment, and I was having an off-air conversation with Chris in Germany, you know, because of the, well, you know, a typing conversation. But I said, you know, I had the advantage of having as an English professor at WVU a woman who had known and loved deeply a young man there. Who was very much a conscientious objector, and he registered. And he was a student at WVU, but he was so busy being anti-war that his grades went in the toilet. So he wound up, you know, sorry, you're out of college. There goes that deferment. So he goes to Vietnam as a conscientious objector, and he's a medic. And she knew him very, very well. And so she knew there were things she knew about Vietnam and the history of Vietnam that were not being taught in history or political science courses when I was there. And so one of the things that she taught us about was the fact that when he declared the independence of Vietnam, Ho Chi Minh presented a petition that directly quoted our Declaration of Independence, including the line about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and how that's all the Vietnamese wanted to do was pursue those. And if that won't break your goddamn heart, and what screwed all of that up, what screwed all of this up, was the fact that that pissant de Gaulle was threatening to go commie. To make France go commie, and of course France would have risen up in arms had he even tried.
Right.
But we didn't call his bluff. Just like we didn't call Winnie's bluff in Iran.
Right.
And so, you know, the people of Southeast Asia had to take it on the chin, because we had to coddle some nasty old racist colonialists.
Hey, Bob, you know what? You know what's interesting is how similar the Vietnam era situation was then. And then fast forward to when we were, well, you're a little bit older than me. You know, I was a young teen, you were mid-teen, with the Iranians. Because when they started, you know, because remember, like, I've worked with Iranians. I'm not trying to be anecdotal, but most folks don't have interactions with a lot of different types of people unless you work in certain types of places. Or unless you live in a big city. And people don't know or forget or not interested. Iran is a very progressive. The people there do not hate us, the populace. You know, just like the populace in Israel is not all weirdo Zionists, it's the government. The people in Iran, they like American stuff. They like Western stuff. It's a very progressive, nice, it's like nice looking.
Oh, I mean, if young people in Iran could see the neon pink Levi's and the neon orange Levi's and the neon green Levi's that I saw in a department store down in Mobile, Alabama, which are not for sale here in West Virginia, I might add. they would go, well, not hog wild. They would go goat wild. Because that's
exactly
that they want. They, yeah. Well, you know, it's a geezer moment with Bob. Young people, what young people in Iran want is a pair of jeans.
Those young people with those fancy, close, weird colors.
Yeah, with those hot pink neon pink jeans. Yeah, god damn it, yeah. But you know, in 1953, when we overturned the democratically elected government of Mohammad Mossadegh, The Iranians weren't marching up and down the square hollering death to America.
No.
They were hollering Britain, get the fuck out.
Right.
Just like everywhere else that Great Britain was hollering.
Those are the ones who corrupted them. Well, not corrupted them, but those are the ones who set up, just like in Saudi Arabia, with BP and British and Shell, Royal Dutch Shell. That would be in Saudi Arabia. But yeah, BP, the British Petroleum, you know, because they didn't have the infrastructure, they didn't have the wherewithal to get the oil out. But I'm not trying to get mired down in that, because it's so much. I mean, you broached so much tonight with that, what you started with the colonialism, because at the end of the day, it appears to me that we're colonializing ourselves, like little nation states or whatever that we have now inside our own country. And you're talking about the pay scale. That's why the pay scale is so low now.
You know, the only thing that Trump didn't say in his address to the African leaders yesterday was that, his friends who are going to spending money and getting rich in Africa are really tickled when they call them Bwana. I mean, goddamn.
He's something. But let me ask you something about the May Lie in terms of that documentary. I was trying to figure out that when Morley Safer, do you remember the part where Morley Safer was interviewing some Marines and they were burning down the village? Was that May Lie? That wasn't May Lie, because May Lie, they didn't have any film of May Lie, did they?
I don't think so. That was really the key to May Lie. And, of course, we should remember that part of the reason that Colin Powell rocketed up through the ranks was because he was willing to do his best to sort of, you know, just cover it up and move on past it.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of had a hand in that.
That was really disgusting. And you know, I like what you were saying. It's like, look, there are people who are on the right side. That's what I'm saying. The left has always been right. The left has always been correct, as far as I can see.
Can't say assassinated about JFK changes that to murder, and can't say murdered about peasants in Vietnam and changes that to killed.
They didn't ask us to come over there. They really didn't. And I'm trying to figure out, you know, the whole thing made me think again about, all right, fine, you got these young kids, and they've been taught that communism is bad for whatever reason. But why are you so frightened? What do you think those people are doing? I mean, really, what did you think was going to happen if you just didn't fuck? Just don't mess with them. What would happen? What would happen? Just don't go over there. Let those people do what they want to do. That's the way they want to live.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to figure that out.
And Ho Chi Minh even said, look, don't get bogged down in the communism shit. You know, and even when he went and studied in Moscow, his tutors in Moscow were leery of him because they said, you know, he sometimes seems a lot more a nationalist than a committed communist.
Mm-hmm.
Which is exactly what he was.
Yeah.
He was,
well,
I mean,
right.
Look, for all that he was demonized and vilified in the United States during the Vietnam era, Ho Chi Minh was the very essence of a patriot within his own country.
He wanted the best for his people. Look at China. China started off as communist, right? But they were like, you know what? We're going to do this for a while. We're going to get on our economic feet because we're living in a capitalistic world now. I mean, who you can't tell? How the hell can you manage that many people? They do a pretty damn good job managing that many people. When I say manage, I don't mean that in a bad way, but I mean it is a management issue. You're in charge of that many people.
And by the way, Asa points out something in the midst of our conversation here. And he says, hey, listen, Bob. The corrupt African dictators look up to Trump. He's a walking Nigerian email scam.
You're damn right, Asa. It's like, you know what?
We get a hard ring of the cowbell for that.
Trump must be related to Richard Pryor, because that nigga's crazy. Seriously. And he acts exactly what he acts like.
Well, did you notice that? I saw some excerpts from, I did not have the stomach to watch the whole thing. But I saw some excerpts, and one of the excerpts was where he said, and you know, we're so proud of Uganda. Uganda has done such a great job with AIDS.
Oh, my God!
With AIDS. And it just so happens, I'm getting tired of being fucked with.
You did not say that.
Yes, I'm getting so tired of being fucked with
by
the universe.
You're making it
two nights ago, I'm sitting here talking about Winston Churchill delivering the Iron Curtain speech at Fulton, and then boom, here's Bernie and Fulton. Well, you know, last week we're, you know, Agnes and me, we sit there at the end of the day, at the Emmys the other night, they said, you know, this is truly the golden age of television, because look at all the choices you have. And I sit there and I swipe through Amazon and I swipe through Netflix and I go, there's nothing fucking on. Because most of the stuff is just culturally past me. Millionaire housewife, plastic surgery. Fuck if I want to watch that.
This audience doesn't like that kind of shit.
And I can't, you know, I just can't. I can't. So lo and behold, I'm sitting there and swipe. And I thought it was maybe a dicey choice on my part, but I said, hey honey, how about this? And I point and she goes, that looks interesting. And so we watched, because I'd never seen it. We watched Last King of Scotland. And I so understand why Forrest Whitaker, I mean, why nominate anybody else that year? Just say, Forrest Whitaker, you get it. Don't even show up. Here's the statue. Goodbye. Jesus, he was brilliant. You know, that wasn't Forrest Whitaker being Idi Amin. That was fucking Idi Amin. Okay. And it was, I thought it was a brilliant movie, but the thing is, so everything sends me off to the internet to learn more. So
right.
I started reading up on Uganda.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, out of 164 nations on Earth, I forget what the exact ranking is, but Uganda is ranked like near the top of most corrupt countries in the world. And so that was what I was thinking, and I shouldn't bitch about the universe. I should thank the universe, because I knew that when I heard the clip of Donald fucking Trump praising the Ugandan government, which is among the most corrupt governments on Earth.
People who are not like 45 or older, they don't understand. Like he was a demon. Like when I was a young man, probably 11 through 15. We say Idi Amin, that was synonymous with, that's a nasty, evil motherfucker.
And have you seen that movie?
I have.
Okay.
But it
starts out, and it's always the dead giveaway. This movie is based on true facts, which means you're about to watch something that might be true insofar as there's really a place called Uganda, and there was really a guy named Idi Amin. The rest of it was kind of made up horse shit. But it was made up.
That's what made you do the research, so that you could get the facts. Like it's a rough, you know, it's like Charlie Wilson's War. We're going to give you the framework, but if you're really interested,
yeah, you go do the reading. Homework. Yeah.
You know, but it's good, man. It's good history. That is good history.
But he he singles out Uganda. Wow.
Right. But listen, he's operating with his military junta. You can see this shit coming. All the general, I mean, it's slow, it's coming. And you got these
fools. You know that given the opportunity, Donald Trump is the kind of petty little shitbag that if he could get away with it, Donald Trump would love nothing more than to say, hey, get me a general. Yeah, I've got some people I want killed. Go out and hack them to pieces, okay? He's that kind of person.
He is. Look who he gravitates to. People, stop. You fucking Trump motherfuckers. I know you don't even listen to this, but fuck you. You're fucking stupid. It's not my fault you're stupid. Wake the fuck up. And we're not angry because Hillary lost. Nobody gives a goddamn about her. It's just about blocking his dumb ass, his ignorant, mentally ill ass. And people have been saying he's a sociopath for a year and a half. Or in this show. For a variety. I mean, he's a walking cauldron of mental illness and dysfunction. You know, it's just a whole lot of shit. Plus the dementia. You know, it's just too much shit. It's just,
don't
yeah,
leave
it's
out the don't leave out the spirochetes. They get pissed off when they're left out.
They're like sea monkeys. You have to feed them, right? Yeah. Okay. Oh my God, I always wanted to talk to you about those sea monkeys because that shit made an impression on me too. I heard you talking about those sea monkeys because that was the time when. Bob, like I said, Bob's a little older than me, but at that time, it was like the hippies had gotten older, but people were like into terrariums. And I remember in Woolworths, they had these really cool terrariums with this like pedestal, you know, it was a terrarium. People had terrariums. And the sea monkeys, I mean, like you said, those packages, you were like, I want those. I have to have that. It's like, I can have a pet. You don't have to walk it. You know, I can feed it. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, no,
you know what
I mean. But you know, I wanted to see the little sea monkey king down there with his little sea monkey crown and his little sea monkey queen and their little sea monkey kids. And
they made it so appealing. They made it. I'm not trying to get off on the tangent, but
no. It was a triumph of marketing. I mean, the packaging and all of it. And you know, my parents were not willing. You know, my mom was gentler about it than my father. My father would look at me and say, will that keep you warm in winter? No, Dad. Will that cool you off in summer? No, Dad. Will that fill your belly
Son,
when you're hungry?
You know
hungry?
What I have to do
no,
to earn
Dad.
Money?
Will that will that assuage your thirst when you're all hot and thirsty? No, Dad. Then why do you want it?
Wow. He should be in the UN. That's pretty good.
No sea monkeys. Video games drove my father to distraction. And let's remember, I came of age. I'm of that generation that looked at the Space Invaders and went, fuck, this is so cool.
I had to be honest with you, man. The younger people don't understand. We used to have to spend, if you added up, a lot of money a week to play the quality of video games.
Oh, I'm personally responsible for somebody, some Williams Corporation executive's house, because I could never. Oh. There were some I was okay at, some better than others, but I could never. Oh, that goddamn Defender game. Son of a bitch. That thing just made quarters fly out of my pocket.
Man, you don't know.
Because, you know, you'd be
cruising
along, you'd be doing okay, and every now and then you'd have to do your universal neutron kill-em-all bomb. But then those little ones that came, and they wouldn't, you know, and they weren't on any particular line, and they homed in on your ass, and there was no way you could shoot them, and, damn it, another quarter.
You knew you could see. You could see death coming. There was no way around it. They had you cornered. It was like there's no way out.
Yeah,
there's no way out.
From that era, I posted something to Twitter today. I was across the river with Ferg, and I stopped. I said, "No, I got to take a picture of this." And the marquee under the Bob Evans sign across the river said, "Meatloaf is back. Just $7.99." And I immediately snapped a picture of it and immediately went to Twitter and said, you know, as I recall, I said, you know, just $7.99. As I recall, I paid $7.99 for Bat Out of Hell.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, see, Meatloaf the artist.
Because, you know, I owe this to my son, I stood in the parking lot and, you know, at the top of my voice, I would do anything for that, but I won't do that. And all of a sudden, Ferg looked like John Kelly watching Donald Trump giving a goddamn speech. You know, just the hand on the forehead,
no.
Looking down, and Dad, please, I had friends. Yeah,
I have to start all over now. Stop. No, what? Man, you know, and I'm not trying to get off. Man, I sound like an old. Well, you know, I mean, what are you supposed to do?
It's late 70s, early 80s geezer hour on the horn. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
No, but listen, I am so like I'm a gamer now, and I'm telling you, I'm good at some racing games. I'm telling you, man. But see, we didn't have this shit. some of these racing games, they actually buy the rights to these cars. They handle, I've driven some of these cars, they handle just like the real car.
I know.
This
the
is first, fucked up. It's so goddamn
addicting. The first time I used my iPad as a steering wheel in a first-person racing game, I was like, where have you been all my life?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I know. Okay. I know.
It's a, but all right, so, yeah, so enough to, you know, I don't know. People, see, if you don't have the Apple technology, the device is the steering wheel. I mean, it puts you in the moment.
Well, it's that whole gyroscope thingy going on. And, you know, whoa, you know, I'm in the moment.
Now I got a motorcycle. I'm like racking up the points.
Whoa.
But anyway,
although I'm still susceptible to a really good side scroller too. You know, well, I still suck at Defender, but there are a couple out there. There was one that was just really pretty. It was simple, but it was pretty. That came out that I played the hell out of on an iPhone and on the iPad. Chopper? What I was looking for was the great old side scroller Choplifter. You remember that one?
I loved that game.
I
played that.
Where you fly
like in Vietnam, where you're dropping off troops.
Yeah, and you pick up the hostages and you fly them back to the base and you go back and you get right.
Right.
I was looking
and
for
you
that.
Avoid getting
but
shot
there's
down.
There's a really pretty elegant chopper side scroller for iOS several generations back that was just really really fun to play. And you know, many many happy hours. People wonder what I do to, you know, sort of cleanse my brains from the 3 hours that, you know, and all the mayhem and madness and everything. And, you know, and I immerse myself in some other period of history when that isn't now. Yeah, see, we're beginning to get resonance here, Todd. I got notes from Randy in PA. I never got anywhere with Tempest. Who did? But he said, I was a pinball wizard. Oh, yeah.
Hell, yeah. What was that? Silver? What was it? The one with the silver ball? It was like this super, looked like a, I don't know. I think he was in a negative superhero.
I had a couple of favorites. One of my favorites was the old, I think it was Bally. There was one called Mata Hari that I loved, and then later one that was one of those multi-ball games called Gorgar.
The multi-ball, yeah.
Lots of flashing and you know, a speaker, and it would say, Gorgar, and goddamn, that was high-tech. Earther points out to me, in my day, you had to blow into the cartridges, and half the games had glitches, and you were a god amongst your friends if you knew the cheat code. That's the way it was, and we liked it.
I don't know why pinball. I don't understand why pinball ever went out. Yeah, that was good, but see, pinball is visceral. Like you can knock the machine. I mean, that shit was fun. I don't understand why it went away, because that pinball is almost perfect. If you get good with that, the game will fuck you up. As soon as you get good, the game will. If it has magnets underneath, that shit will fuck you up. When you start getting really good at it, right?
Yeah.
There, the Wild West. Like when you said Williams, I was like, yeah, I remember. And then if you're in the pizza parlor, like, because it was always in the pizza parlor in my neighborhood, right?
Oh yeah, sure.
And you get the nice and a dollar slice. It was a lot of money for a dollar. That was a lot, right? But it was really good pizza.
The pizza was made out of old shoe leather, and we liked it that way.
But then when you so what happens is that if you match. Like if you match with your score, if the two digits of your score match whatever pre-match
clap
sequence was, it pop, and everybody would look around like, and then you were, you know, I mean, you think about it, you're a teenager, you know what I'm saying? You were a young teen or whatever.
Oh, and everybody it goes clap, and everybody looks around, lucky bastard. Yeah,
it was loud. Was it not loud, Bob?
Yeah. Oh, it was a really loud whack. I mean, it was something smacking the inside of the case or something. Whack. Son of a bitch.
All right, hey, okay, I want to ask you one more thing. I want to just comment, though, on the Back to the Vietnam documentary. That was great. That was a good flashback. I like that. So because I was waking up and going to sleep, so I got to see some of the, you know, what's more episode four now, I guess. But anyway, when you see him in the beginning, you can see who donate. There's a lot of credits. You look at the credits, there's a lot of donations.
Yeah, there was one. There was one particular supporter that almost made me turn it off and just say, fuck it, I'm not
participating. I bet you're going to say what I was about to say. DK?
Oh, yeah. Through the... The Ken Burns documentary, the Ken Burns documentary Vietnam, was made possible by a generous grant from David Koch.
David Koch, man, it was the whole fucking screen.
I mean, you know, Jesus, like, Jesus Burns, you know, do you have to take everybody's money? I mean, yeah, and you know who wasn't on there? Made possible by a generous grant from George fucking Soros. Because he can take David Koch's money, but the precious little Trump maggots, snowflakes. George Soros, goddamn!
I'm telling you, that shit. I was in the middle of the night, and it just woke me. I hadn't been asleep. Now I've been up for like 24 hours now. Since that, when I saw that full screen of Dick provided, you know, funding provided by the Arthur Vining Foundation.
And one of these days, I thought about it. One of these days, I'm going to look up all these family foundations and find out where the money came from. You know, where the family's money came from.
Well, that.
I mean, I know that there's a wealthy foundation out there, and their money came from tobacco. And of course, we know the Coke money. Some of it came from good old Joe Stalin. Well, not really, because that was what made old Pappy Koch such a rabid anti-communist. Stalin stiffed him. And
well, Doris Duke is tobacco.
Well, no, there's some other folks too. Last name Reynolds. R.J. Reynolds tobacco.
Marlboro.
Hello. Yeah. No, R.J. Reynolds is like Winston and Salem and Camel and stuff like that.
Okay.
Marlboro was Philip Morris.
Oh, that's Philip Morris. You're absolutely right.
Which is now Altria. Because
I used to smoke. I used to love smoking cigarettes, Bob. I'm not gonna lie to you, especially taking public transit. Oh, I mean, when I was smoking, man, I told you, the drum. If you're still smoking, man, you get a pack of drum.
Oh, that's the stuff by what? Dewey Ebert? Yeah.
It comes out of Holland.
Yeah, beats the living daylights out of Bugler. I know that.
Oh yeah. Oh right. Exactly.
That's some evil shit. It'd be interesting just to look up all these family foundations that finance all this stuff and go, who did you screw to get your money? And you, how did your family screw? Who did your family screw to get theirs? Because that's the thing. And I don't have time to look it up right now, but there's not a single wealthy family in this nation that didn't make its money out of blood somehow or another. And I don't care who you're talking about. We sit and we stare in open mouth, wide eyed horror at Comrade Kumquat. But if you think about where he comes from, you know, come on. He's just behaving according to type. The people he comes from are the kind of people that people where I come from would have referred to back in the day as poor white trash. Okay? The Trump progenitors, you know, those, you know, you want to know what the Trumps are all about?
You know you just said poor white trash, right?
Yeah, I did. Yes.
Okay, I'm just.
I think I can say that. But
can I say nigga?
You can. I can't. I ain't Bill Maher.
Well.
But
Bill Maher.
If you can drink about a half a pint of Old Crow. And start reading William Faulkner. Start reading William Faulkner and read about the Snopeses. The Trumps are the Snopeses, okay? On the one hand, You got Grandpappy Trump, who is a goddamn coward who ran away from Germany and became a pimp.
Mm-hmm.
And his son is Pappy Trump, who was a racist, redlining son of a bitch who got arrested at a Klan rally in 1927.
Right.
And then you got Mammy Trump, who comes from a place in Scotland where the gene pool was so goddamn shallow you couldn't drown a piss ant in it. And we sit here going, how could he be that way? Fuck, he has to be that way.
You connected the data points, didn't you, Bob?
Can I have a cowbell for the gene pool so shallow you couldn't drown a piss ant?
Yes, you can.
Thank you.
Two.
Okay, thank you.
No, you know, I'm glad you did that, because it's not just like this is just an apparition out of nowhere.
I mean, he doesn't have that weird little anus mouth for no reason.
What is up with that shit?
He gets that from his mama's side of the family. And really, if you look up where she comes from, I mean, that's some straight up Old Testament, and Adam knew Eve, and Eve knew Adam, and Adam's first cousin knew Eve, and Eve's first cousin knew Adam, and the progeny all had baby's arms coming out of their heads. I mean, it is a seriously inbred place.
Bob, and you know, speaking of that, now we're getting into the nitty gritty. He's vile, so we have to be vile also. But listen, so right, what you're saying exactly, and these hand gestures, like in other words, what does he? I know we know he watches news TV all day long. He watches himself on TV because that's who he is. He's a narcissist, he's a sociopath. That's who he is. It's all about Trump. He can't be contrite. And that's the first moniker of being a sociopath, yeah, that you cannot apologize, ever, period. And that's him. But I digress. What I'm saying is that he watches himself on television. Can he not see his mouth? I've heard you say it looks like a cat's asshole. And that's the truth. That shit looks ridiculous. But beyond that, these Mussolini-like hand gestures, all they do is magnify, and it draws attention to his stumpy, disgusting little tiny hand. That motherfucker is too large to have this little weird-ass little hand.
You know, I was thinking the other day...
He has this little weirdo pervert hand.
I was thinking the other day about what a damn shame it is that we lost Gilda Radner so many years ago. Because to have her come back and do Roseanne, Rosanna, Dana about Donald Trump would be, for, you know, somewhere there's an alternate universe where she, you know, where she is. And what's up with his hands? The little tiny with the stubby fingers. I'm telling you, it's disgusting. Wouldn't you pay?
Bob, you got that. That's a cowbell, man. Yeah, I'm telling you, that's a cowbell.
And by the way, Jack just wrote in. See, I knew I'd touch a nerve somewhere. This is why I love radio. I get a note from Jack. It's just, there's no body to the email. Subject line just says, effing Gorgar. Hell yeah. Yeah. See, somebody knew. But really, I mean, historically speaking, after the Highland clearances that followed the Jacobite Rebellion of, you know, 1745 or so, the British come through and pretty much what they don't engage in, you know, a stiff upper lip genocide up there. I mean, they depopulate I mean, that's why they're called the Highland Clearances. And you can go and read about the little place where Trump's mother came from, and there's no way that family wasn't fucking family. There's a reason he's hot and wants to do his daughter. It runs in the family.
Damn.
I mean, that's gross
that's
as shit, and I'm sorry,
wow.
But, you know, it is what it is.
But you know, that thing, that stuff runs in families, too. So, wow. Okay.
I mean, I have a personal experience with, you know, with going up the holler in West Virginia one day, and I was with a friend, and he was delivering something, you know, he'd made. He was a craftsman.
Right.
And he goes to the door, and this little toe-headed kid comes out, you know, barefoot and dirty. And what? Toe-headed? And he says, and he gives the guy's name, and he says, "Is he home? I got something for him." And the kid goes, "Uncle Daddy." I shit you not. It happened.
Oh my God.
And it's real. And that wasn't the only one. Okay? It doesn't happen more in Appalachia than it happens anywhere else. It happens at pretty much the same rate the world over. But it happens. And there is no way it didn't happen in that little, tiny, barely wet on the bottom of, you know, gene pool where his mama came from.
Well, we're talking about mama. Don't talk about mama.
You know, and going, I got a cowbell worthy one here before we get out of here, Todd. A cowbell for Earther, who, in reference to the sponsors of these, you know, these PBS documentaries and stuff, said, "Vietnam, brought to you by Acme Nuclear Sludge Company, the makers of Milton Friedman baby formula." that was a beautiful thing. But we gotta pretty much get out of here. But it's been a magnificent conversation, Todd. I always enjoy them, and it's so good. And I'm glad we had a chance to talk. But you just watch and keep an ear to the ground down there, because that's some several billions of dollars that Donnie Dipshit's talking about taking out of the South Carolina economy. And you gotta wonder how much.
That reminded me.
I gotta wonder how much they'll love him when he does that.
Because you remember that he was all big on that during the campaign. You know, he was talking about that. He brought that up. So I'm really glad that you piqued my memory about that. And thanks, Bob. You're doing a great job, by the way. And people, we have to support Bob any way you can, because we're in trying times. And, you know, this is just where good things happen.
Thanks, Todd. Thanks a bunch. I appreciate it. You take care.
Take care.
All right. Bye now.
Okay.
Our buddy Todd, calling from South Carolina, Stan. It is, it's time to get out of here. I don't know where the time goes. By the way, I didn't know I was doing this, but Brother Deacon Asa told me, he said, I know a word or two are Arabic, and he said, you've come upon something cool in referring to Roy Tola Moore. Ayatollah literally means God's message. Incidentally, Roy Tola translates into God's visage. You've in fact invented an Arabic phrase. The goddess of irony shines upon all of us. Thought you might like that. Who knew? That's kind of cool. I invented an Arabic phrase. Yay me. Big thanks going out. I'd said earlier we were at zero. We're not at zero. Big thanks going out to our buddy Will in Chicago. For getting us off the schneid, as well as to Cecilia. Thank you very kindly. That means we knocked out all but $30 of what we had to raise for the evening. That's huge. And so that also means that we got $155 to go to meet Chris's Wipe Out the Week at Night Early challenge. And maybe it'll get met between now and, say, airtime tomorrow. Which, by the way, is Friday on the Front Porch. The extraordinary, ordinary roundtable in which just about anybody can bring just about anything to the table and discuss it. It'll be fun, I hope. And, well, we'll see what happens then. Thanks to all of you who keep the program going. Thanks to our subscribers. Thank you to those of you who kick in as you can, when you can. Thank you to everybody who listens, however it is you so do, and participates in this conversation that here in 1 month and 3 days will be well past 12 years going. Next month is anniversary month. Thank you. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room, and thank you to Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox, Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, and at Coal River MTN on Twitter. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.